absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. I'm back on Sunday, and I'm glad to be back with my co-host, Rev Fantasy. And you know what time it is. This is the Master Plan. I am JT, along with my Rev Fantasy co-host. The number to call in is 347-637-3220, 347-637-3220. It's the place to be when to talk to Rev and me. And we also have a chat room. The chat room is always open. If you'd like to put a question in there, make a comment, or make a statement, what you put in it is what you're going to get out of it. So if you want to keep it civil, that's what you're going to get. If you don't, well, guess what you're going to get. You give what you get. So, or you get what you give. Let me put it whatever way you want to put it. That's the way it is. But without further ado, I talked to him yesterday on the FSP Cruise Show, which is at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, every Saturday. But this is our show. This is the show when we drop the knowledge. Rev drops the gospel. I help drop the knowledge also. And this is the show you should be listening to, if nothing else. So without further ado, let's bring in my esteemed co-host, which I haven't talked to like this in a couple weeks, Rev Fantasy. What's up, my man?
What's going on, brother? I'm glad to have you back, man. I've been flying solo for the last couple of weeks, so I'm glad to have you back, bro.
Well, I know you had no problem holding it down because it you got it like that. But it's definitely glad to be back, and there's a lot of things that have been going on for the short time, even though it's been a long time, that I haven't been on the air with you. And one of the things I want to break it off first with is the your team out of Ohio. Starts with an O, ends with an O, the Cleveland Browns. I don't know what the heck is going on here, okay? Let me lay this down on you, and then let me get your input on this. Cleveland Browns were the last team that was able to hire a coach. Several head coaching candidates turned down an interview. Didn't want to be interviewed by the Cleveland Browns. There was a lot of rumors going around that the Cleveland Browns were dysfunctional, and there was a lot of issues going on with the team, Cleveland Browns, and I'm thinking it may have been related to the owner and the type of issues that he's going through in the direction of what the Cleveland Browns are going to be. They got rid of their head coach with his Rod Chudzinski. They got rid of, quite naturally, or they left their two coordinators, one being Norv Turner, who had a pretty good offense going, even though they had no running game, and it had a pretty good defense where they had Ray Horton as a defensive coordinator. Well, because of the disgust in only 1 year of Chudzinski being in place as the head coach and getting fired, and he was the last coach to get fired, Norv Turner was disgusted, Ray Horton was disgusted, and they left. And then you thought things were getting pretty on the stable side when they hired Mike Pettine as the head coach. But not long after that, they got rid of Joe Banner and Michael Lombardi. Michael Lombardi was the general manager, and Joe Banner was the president of the, if I'm not mistaken, of the Cleveland Browns. And then they hired Ray Farmer to be the general manager. And like I had told Rev Fantasy a short time ago, supposedly the head coach is not going to directly report to Ray Farmer. He's going to report to the owner, Mr. Haslam. And without also what's going on here is the one of the starting quarterbacks, that Michael Lombardi, who was a prior regime, drafted with Brandon Whedon. Now, Brandon Whedon didn't play that well. He was in and out of the lineup. Brian Hoyer, who wants to be the number one quarterback now, got injured with an ACL, and he's recovering from that, and there's a possibility that he may be the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, or the Cleveland Browns are going to draft a starting quarterback, a rookie, in the up-and-coming draft on May 8th. I mean, there's a lot of storylines that I've just laid out, and I'm just want to get Rev Fantasy's take on it, because the fact is, Ray Farmer, what kind of influence and where does he stand in the equation? Because he's basically the last person to get hired in all this, in the management of the Cleveland Browns. So where does he stand, and what is his role? And he's never been a GM before. This is his first GM job. And the NFL Combine is coming up less than a week from today. Starts the 22nd of February. Rev Fantasy, I know I laid out a lot. I maybe extended my time laying it all out, but I had to get all the scenarios I could possibly think of out here, because I'll give you the time to whatever way you want to go with it. Talk to me about your Cleveland Browns.
Let me start off, brother, by saying I'm just going to throw some numbers out for you, JT. I know you're a statistic kind of guy. So just listen to these numbers. The last 14 years, since 1999, when the Browns came back into the league when they had a four-year break, these are just some numbers for you. They've had, in 14 years, they've had three owners, eight head coaches, seven GMs. Those numbers right there just tell you how terrible this franchise is being ran. And if you go through the 14 years, three owners, seven GMs, and eight head coaches in 14 years,
yeah,
that just speaks volumes of how dysfunctional this organization is from head to toe. It's unreal. And the sad part is they actually have a decent team of young talent,
yes,
of individuals with the right coaching. If they would have kept, I think, North Turner and Ray Horton on board, I don't even care who the head coach is, this team, I think, could have competed easily next year for the division. Easily. They could have possibly surprised everybody and made the playoffs, in which they've only made the playoffs once in the last 14 years and had two winning seasons. So you tell me, man, as a Browns fan, it's sickening, man. When I actually looked at the numbers last night, and I'm digging through this, and I'm just sick to my stomach when I actually see how dysfunctional this organization is.
Well, my first question is this, and I'm going to start at the top and work my way down. Your owner, Haslam, he's got some legal issues that he's got to go through, and I want you to tell me what you think of, first of all, your ownership, because we had talked about this yesterday on the FSP show about laying a foundation of what direction or what type of franchise or what you want to be, what type of team you want to be. Give me I give you the time, ain't no big deal, what you think of your owner, Mr. Haslam.
I kind of compare him, like we talked about before, he's on the lines. I think he's going right down the same path as the Daniel Snyders and the Jerry Jones,
mm-hmm,
of the NFL, where this guy is quick to pull the trigger on the coaching staff or GM or people that are underneath him. I think he's eager to win because he wants to. I think he's always succeeded in business, but that doesn't always translate into NFL success. So, like we talked about, yeah, with the Jerry Jones situation, where Jerry Jones is involved, where he's the president, the GM, the owner. So, this guy, you might as well say he's doing the same things because he's had some great football minds that were there. You know, Mike Lombardi, well-respected around the league. Hell, he had Mike Holmgren. We forget about that. Mike Holmgren was there when he first got the team, and he let him go. So, I don't know, man. I'm glad that someone he bought the team initially from Randy Lerner. I was thinking that was going to be a good thing. And now I'm starting to wonder how this guy's. As a leader, you need to entrust the people you hire. Now, as an owner, I get it. You're writing the checks. You want to see success. And I understand that. But, and a big but is, you have to trust the people underneath you. Or don't hire them. You know? Why even have a GM like Ray Farmer if you're going to talk directly with the coach? There's no sense in that. You're giving Ray Farmer a free paycheck. You know what I mean? So,
right. And
trust your people to make the right decisions. If they're not making the right decisions, then you can. But you can't pull the carpet out from underneath them or not give them all the tools to be successful. So, I just don't. That doesn't translate into being successful in any business you're in.
Okay. We talked about your owner. Now, they got rid of Michael Lombardi, who is well-respected around the league. He had a short tenure. And to piggyback on what you said about the owner having some patience. Now, the team was in my opinion, was in a bad state for such a long time. This is just my opinion, that it's going to take a little time to get to overturn the talent that was originally there to what the talent that you want there to be able to be successful on the football field. I don't know if this owner is looking for instant success, because if that's the case, then he shouldn't be an owner of a football team, especially when he took it over, the issues that the team had. And realizing that it's a process to turn a team around. It's not instantaneous if you don't have the pieces in place to make that work. The reason I'm saying that is, and I'll make it a good analogy here. The team last year, the Houston Texans have a very good team, but they had a bad year. The year before that, the Kansas City Chiefs had a lot of pieces in place, but a lot of things went wrong, and both of those two teams I just named had 2-14 seasons. Kansas City, with their new coaching staff, with a new coach, turned it around, but they had pieces in place. Houston, just because I'm a Houston fan, I'm not saying this, but I think they're in a position to do the same thing, to turn around right away. Cleveland's a different story. Now, you have pieces, but you don't have the same amount of pieces that you have in Houston and in Kansas City to turn it around from one season to the next. But over time, and it could be a short time depending on how well you do in the draft, you can put pieces in place. But if you keep turning over the coaching staff and the front office under you, that'll be a problem because you don't have any consistency of what the players are listening to. Each coaching staff, each GM or president has a different philosophy, a different way of doing things. The stable franchises like the Steelers, for one, like the Patriots for another, like other teams that are consistent and have a way of doing things and don't turn over the coaching staff when they have a bad year, are successful. The problem I have with the Cleveland Browns, and hopefully, let me put it this way, hopefully, if the Cleveland Browns don't do well this year, which I'm hoping they do, but if they don't do well this year, I hope I don't see a repeat of the same thing that happened last year. Otherwise, this guy's putting down a pattern of either give me results this year or I'm getting rid of you. And that's a bad way of doing business, especially in the NFL. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't know if you want to expound on that or not, but that's how I feel. This may be going that way. Talk to me.
Anytime you bring in multiple GMs, every GM has a vision and a plan how to rebuild a franchise. And I'm looking online now at the Cleveland Browns, just their draft history over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ridiculous. Like the number one picks that they've had, how many of them have panned out? You know, I'm going to just go back to last couple of years. It's been a little bit better, but last year they had Mingo, the outside of the defensive end. He has potential to be pretty solid for them from 2013. 2012, first-round draft pick, Brandon Weeden. They label him as a bust already.
Right.
And pulled the carpet out from him. They traded away their other 2012 draft pick, Trent Richardson, traded him away. So what do you get out of that draft? Not much. 2011, Bill Taylor. He's still an integral piece of that defense that they got going. Not a superstar, but pretty solid. 2010, Joe Hayden. T.J. Ward, two All-Pro players from 2010. You got Alex Mack, who was their center, who's pending free agent this year. He was an All-Pro this year. And then you go all the way back to 2007, and they wasted a first-round draft pick on Brady Quinn, you know, which they pulled the carpet out. So, we're just talking in the last 7 years, how much, over half of their first-round draft picks, more than half, which you should be building your franchise on, have either been traded away, cut, and with only about three that have actually panned out in 7 years, And we're talking about when you've had multiple first-round draft picks in certain years. So, I don't know, man. It's just, as a Browns fan, it's disheartening, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So disheartening. You've seen the potential on the field now. I look at that team now, and I'm like, the way that AFC North division is, we can win this team. You know, it's there
yep.
for the taking.
Yep. Yep.
It's Baltimore is not anything that scares me. Pittsburgh's got talent, but they're not where they used to be. And Cincinnati's kind of a young team with a lot of talent, but it seems like, they're a hit or miss team, but since we're in that division, they win it by default, I just don't understand why we had a good thing last year. We had a good thing going last year. Defensively, they were a top 10 defense. Ray Horton's definitely one of the best defensive coaches in the league.
No doubt.
They had those guys playing some ball. Yeah, they had a bad couple-week stretch. But overall, they were pretty solid during the year. And you got pieces to work with, I'll say, on that defense. Joe Hayden's, the T.J. Ward's, the Dowell Jackson's, the Mingo's, So we're not talking about, starting with nothing. You got stars to play with there. And then offensively, you got the best receiver in the league last year.
Absolutely.
Best receiver going. You had one of the best tight ends going in the league last year in Cameron Jordan.
No doubt.
You got one of the best tackles that might be on this century's team, Joe Thomas, protecting the blind side.
Yep.
And we're talking about Josh Gordon leading the league in receiver. We're talking about Cameron Jordan being in the top three tight ends receiving, and the world's leading the NFL on touchdowns, so Jimmy Graham went crazy. You know, well, you got pieces there. And you did that with a mix-match group of quarterbacks. Hell, we're talking about Brian Hoyer. This guy was working at a Verizon cell phone shop. They picked this guy up off the street. He comes in and starts three games, and they won, I think, two of them, and were competitive when he was playing. So I don't know. You know, that makes me question Brandon Whedon a little bit. Maybe, or is it the organization that makes Brandon Whedon not successful? Because you see, the guy's got talent. We're not talking about a young kid here. We're talking about a 29-year-old rookie. You know, you wasted a first-round draft pick on him. Why wouldn't you let him grow in your system?
Right.
Turn around, those guys playing the ball. So I question why Jim Harbaugh let those guys walk. Why? I don't care, like I said, who the head coach is, you know. But you're never going to get a head coach. My point is, if you've got eight coaches in 14 years, do you think in their right mind any well-established head coach is going to want to come in here and do it the way he's going to want to do it? And he knows that the owner's not going to allow that because he's going to want to do it his way. So you're going to keep getting these guys, no disrespect to Mike Pettine or anything, but you're going to keep getting these guys that first-year head coaches who lack that swag, that experience of coming in and running things and knowing the right way of doing business. You know what I mean, Jerry?
Sure. Sure,
and,
absolutely.
And you're going to keep getting these young cats that you just keep starting over around here, around here, around here, and all they are is puppets for the owner, you know? Because all they know, they're coaching for a contract because they know they're asking to get fired after the next year or two. So it's ridiculous when you're trying to succeed under those circumstances. You're trying to put a product out on the field, but yet you, as the owner, you expect them to win and do things out on the field. You're not giving them the tools to be successful.
Well, speaking of tools to be successful, we talked about two of the tools, especially on the offensive side. I'm not going to talk on the defense because I think the defense, we've seen it happen before, but that's a pretty stable type of defense, and you got to be pretty inept to spoil the way that defense can get after an offense. I want to talk about the offensive side of the ball for the simple fact is you talked about Jordan Cameron, you talked about Josh Gordon with our two budding new stars in the league. Quite naturally, you know, they got rid of Trent Richardson and they got an old Willis McGahee who probably not long before the Cleveland Browns if he hasn't been released yet. And they don't have anybody behind him that's considered a bell cow or a consistent running back. So I imagine that, one, they're going to be drafting a running back or trying to get a running back from somewhere, maybe a free agent like a Ben Tate or somebody like that who's a free agent to take the spot of what they traded away, Trent Richardson. The key position, quite naturally, in every team is the quarterback position. Now, you talked about the guy they took off the street that was working in the Verizon store. I'm talking about Brian Hoyer, who up until the time he got hurt was performing pretty well, surprisingly for a lot of people, but he was performing pretty well. I don't know if that was because of North Turner and his guru-type ways of being able to get the best out of a quarterback and putting a quarterback in the best position to play well, or because Brian Hoyer, for whatever all intents and purposes, the light clicked on and he realized the best way to play as an NFL quarterback. My question to you is this, and I think I asked it before we got on the air. You think Brian Hoyer, if he comes back healthy, should be the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, or should they draft a quarterback in the first round or whatever round you feel that they should draft a quarterback, and if you have any ideas of who they should draft as a quarterback possibly starting for the Cleveland Browns?
Okay, well, to answer your question, if I'm the head coach of this team, I'm not going to draft, and ownership wouldn't draft a quarterback in this class. Even though there's some decent quarterbacks, they own the number four pick. They could pretty much either get a Johnny Football, possibly know for sure they could get a Teddy Bridgewater or a Blake Bortles. Call me crazy. This is just what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I was GM of the day. I would go out and there's some decent. There's not, out of all the free agents that are out there on the market for the quarterback position, there isn't a whole lot at the quarterback position. So I'm gonna say I would either go two ways. I would either bring in. I would definitely keep Hoyer. And have Hoyer come back in, have Brandon Whedon. I let Jason Campbell walk just due to the pure – Jason Campbell put up some decent numbers last year, but I would let him walk just because he's not going to get paid. I'd probably keep Brian Hoyer cheap. I'd already have Brandon Whedon under contract. I would go get either a Mike Vick or even a Josh McNown that performed well in Chicago, and I would let the street duke it out, man, and see where it goes from there. I honestly would bring in some competition, a veteran, like I said, either the McNown or the Mike Vick signing, give them an incentive-based contract for 1-2 years, and let them go see where it goes from there. I really think Brandon Whedon hasn't been given a fair shot at this thing. So, and Hoyer, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on this cat. I mean, there's a reason why he was working at a Verizon shop. I think that was his success. It's not to disrespect him in the slightest. I think he owes North Turner kudos for making him being successful in the right system and toning down the offense to fit his strengths. So I think if you were to see them get the reins this year under their new offensive coordinator, I don't even know who that is. I don't think he would have the success. And he's coming off an ACL injury. Why even roll the dice? You know what I mean? But I think this kid, at least I'm about loyalty, so I would definitely just keep him on the roster as my backup or as a third-string quarterback.
All right, well then, what about Johnny Football? I got a quote saying that he'll pour his heart out for the dog pound if the Browns draft me. So what do you think about Johnny Football dropping down to Cleveland? And I'm not exactly sure. What position is Cleveland drafting in? They got to be pretty high.
They're drafting in the number four position. And
number
I'm going to tell you who the pick is for me at number four. I'm going to tell you because I want you to just marinate on this thought, Jerry. I'm going to go with Sammy Watkins, the receiver from Clemson. You put him and Josh Jordan together, you might have the most dynamic freaking duo going
wow.
in the NFL today.
Wow, that's a good thought. I never thought about Sammy Watkins going to the Cleveland Browns at number four. Wow. I understand what you're saying. Wow.
But you think, Jerry, you add him to the mix, he's a big receiver who could do it all. He runs across the middle. He runs the deep ball better than he does anything. Josh Gordon, a do-it-all receiver who runs over the middle, runs a deep ball. And then you got Cameron Jordan, who's working the middle of the field and the red zone threat. And then with my second round pick, guess what? I would either freaking shut up that offensive line and defensive line, and then free agency, I would attack the running back position. I would either go with sign a guy like Ben Tate, an MJD, a Darren McFadden comes to mind. But they need to get a clear-cut one running back that's going to be able to take the load off whoever's playing quarterback. So regardless whoever that is, there's a lot of good running backs out there in this draft class. There's a lot of good free agent running backs that are out there. And I don't think you have to throw the bank at them too much. I think if for some of these solid veterans who've been out there like a MJD, I think you could give him an incentive-based deal where you're not breaking the bank totally on this guy and let him come in and be successful, because Cleveland, it's not like their offensive line is terrible, so a running back can be good in that system. Now, they're going to sling it around the field, but just imagine, they go out and sign a Mike Vick, draft a Sammy Watkins, you got Josh Gordon, you got Cameron Jordan, and they get a Maurice Jones through at running back. We might be talking about something special on offense.
Wow. You know, you do have a point there. I'm just picturing that offense going up against a defense week in and week out with two bookend wide receivers and a dynamic tight end like Jordan Cameron, with a Mike Vick and an MJD in the backfield. Ooh, wow. But don't you think that maybe in the later rounds you probably have to draft a quarterback to you have Brian Hoyer here, but, I mean, how long is he going to last? And I know Brian Weeden wants out of Cleveland, and he could be a disruptive in the Cleveland Browns. So I would think you probably would, in the third or fourth round or whatever, draft a quarterback for the future and have that would be, you know, if you got somebody like Michael Vick or I don't know if you want Matt Schaub, but Michael Vick, you would have two deep threats on either side, Sammy Watkins and Josh Gordon, and you would have a dual-threat quarterback in the backfield along with possibly a Ben Tate or MJD, who both of those guys can catch the ball out of the backfield besides running the ball. That would be a nice complement to the defense that you have, and you could be instant contenders in the AFC North. What do you think about that?
I don't necessarily think you have to go out. I don't always like that terminology. Oh, every year we got to go sign a future. Man, let's just be honest. Most of those guys that get drafted in the fifth round, fourth round, third round, other than a Russell Wilson story, most of those guys ain't getting no runs. You know, mm-hmm. Let's just be true.
Mm-hmm.
So why even waste the damn draft pick? If you're going to be successful in the NFL, you need to build from the outside in. The Browns have skill players. They need to get down in those trenches, get that defensive line shored up, get that offensive line shored up. Once you get that and you start building depth, look at like how Seattle did it. They built the trenches, they worked their way up and got the skill positions. Then next you know, they have so much depth. You're talking about at those key positions in the trenches, they go too deep, you know, a team like the Niners, and that's why they have success. So, and I'm going to tell you another guy that the Browns should possibly look at, that quarterback, and I think he gets overlooked, and he has a little chip on his shoulder. I think he could come in, and he's still a young guy, is a guy like Josh Freeman. You know, he's not too removed from having a pretty solid year 2 years ago. And last year was just a wash with the guy. I think he's still, the guy's 25 years old. Why not give him a shot? His His forte is throwing the ball. If you wouldn't got a Sammy Watkins, you got Josh Gordon, Jordan Cameron, this guy might be able to bounce back, and I'm pretty sure you get the guy for cheap, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem I have with Josh Freeman, and I don't know, personally don't know a lot about him, but supposedly his worth ethic and his supposedly dedication to the game is in question. That's the reason why one of the things that happened in Tampa, and also one of the reasons that were he didn't get much playing time in Minnesota, because whatever he was doing in Tampa, he was doing the same thing in Minnesota, being late to meetings and not really getting into the playbook. So, some guys may need a change of scenery for a third time, and it may click. He may realize that this, you know, if I don't do what I'm supposed to do here, I'll be out of the league and not living the life of an NFL player and getting paid as such. He's got a ton of talent. It's just putting it all together, and maybe if he gets with the right coaching staff in the right situation, he can put it together with the potential weapons that he could have in the passing game and possibly in the running game. With a solid defense, the quarterback really doesn't need to do a whole hell of a whole lot, just not make mistakes to lose the game. It could possibly work. All right, let's move on. I want to talk about another organization that made a move in the front office and brought in an ex-quarterback and an ex-MVP Super Bowl-winning quarterback and the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I'm talking about Doug Williams, who got rehired, who got hired by the Washington Redskins as a personnel executive, who's going to be working with Scott Campbell, who's the director of player personnel, and scouting college prospects. And he's also going to be working with Morocco Brown, who's the director of pro personnel, on evaluation of free agent talent. And he's also supposed to be helping with the evaluation of the Redskins roster with Bruce Allen and Jay Gruden and company. Now, there's been a lot of reported dysfunction in the Washington Redskins front office and with the team itself, and with the coaching staff on down, and the turmoil, supposed turmoil or dysfunction that the coaching staff, meaning Kyle and Mike Shanahan with the RG3, and then the eventual benching the last few games of RG3 to supposedly preserve him for the offseason going into 2014. There's one NFL quarterback that offered to talk to RG3 about the good things and bad things of being under the Shanahan regime that got rebuffed by RG3. Doug Williams is a revered in Washington as the a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and like I said, the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl. He's got a ton of class. He was former Grambling quarterback, former Grambling head coach, now with the Washington Redskins. And besides him doing all these, wearing all these hats with Scott Campbell and Morocco Brown and Bruce Allen and Jay Gruden and company, I think he's also been brought in here to mentor. Well, I don't want to say mentor, but give some advice here and there or sounding board to RG3. Your thoughts on Doug Williams coming back to the Redskins and playing a role in the front office and possibly helping out RG3 and making him a better quarterback?
No, I think it's a great signing for the Washington Redskins, and kudos to them. should have brought this guy back. Or there was rumors he was going to come back and be the GM back in 2010, and it didn't happen. But who better to understand where RG3 is trying to go than the guy who already did it? You know what I mean? The guy who was a trailblazer and first African-American to win a Super Bowl, understand those pressures of carrying a franchise at a high level. I think when we look back at history, we overlook this guy and what he accomplished, you know. And he did it with class, and he was able to do it in a pressure-filled environment. And he was playing against some really stiff competition back then, too.
Right.
And, I think it's a great move for the Washington Redskins. Size. Doug Williams, this guy, I know him. He's a player's player. He's been in the college game, you know, as a coach the last couple of years. So he understands the young person's mindset. You know what I mean? He goes through the recruiting battles. And so he knows how to talk to these young dudes and get into their mind. And I think with RG3, it's all in his psyche right now. I think he, you know, for the first time in his life, he got faced with adversity and, you know, he didn't perform well. So how do you bounce back from that? You got to be resilient, you know. So I think hiring Doug Williams is going to help him with that process. I think this guy is going to be one sole purpose is to mentor and just be a buddy and a friend to RG3, someone that's not, you know, RG3 keeps, from what we understand, keeps a pretty tight circle. He's really just deals with his dad a lot. This is a guy who could step in and play, you know, who's not in his inner circle that can be in his inner circle and still it's an influence from the ownership. So, and I think it's a really good signing for them. Really good signing.
Yeah, the reason I brought this up is because besides the Jay Gruden hiring as a head coach, and also because they, in quotation marks, shut RG3 down, and the fact is, And I think this last signing with Doug Williams, they're putting all the pieces in place to have RG3 have a bounce back year and have a lot better year than he had last year. And plus the fact he's 1 year removed from the ACL, so he's his knee's that much more healthier, and he's more confident in what he can do with his legs. Because the time period that most guys, save Adrian Peterson, have to go through in order to feel confident from an ACL injury, I think RG3 is due back from due to have a bounce back year and. All, like I said, all the pieces are in place for that to happen. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. We're going to talk about the NFL franchise tags, okay, for 2014. Now, there's two types of tags here. There's two types of tags in a franchise, and there's also a transition tag. Let me explain what the franchise tags are. There's a non-exclusive and there's exclusive franchise tags. A non-exclusive franchise tag is a player must be offered a one-year contract based on an average of the non-exclusive franchise numbers at his position over the last 5 years and their percentage of the current year's salary cap or 120% of his prior year's salary, usually a salary cap number, whichever is greater. This tag allows the player to negotiate with other teams, but if he signs an offer sheet with another club, his team has 5 days to match the offer. If the offer is not matched, his team will receive two first-round picks as compensation from the Shining team. And then within that franchise tag, there is an exclusive franchise tag. I just talked about the non-exclusive. This is an exclusive tag. A player will receive a one-year offer from his team that is the greater of the average of the top five salaries at his position. Once the restricted free agent signing period has ended, which is May 2nd, or 120% of his prior year salary, a player cannot negotiate with other teams with the exclusive franchise tag. Now, the transition tag, which was also set Friday, if a player gets that tag, he is free to negotiate with other teams, and his current club has the right to match any offers. If he doesn't match, the player leaves with no compensation owed. And let me run down these franchise tags and transition tags real quick by position. Quarterback franchise tag for this year is $14,896,000. Transition is $13,068,000. Running back is $8,219,000. The running back transition is $6,970,000. Wide receiver is $10,537,000. Transition is $8,666,000. Tight end is $6,066,000. Transition is $5,194,000. I'm just going here. Let me see. Let me do this. Cornerback, $10,854,000. Transition is $9,095,000. Defensive end is $11,175,000. And the transition is $9,151,000. And I'll give two more. Offensive lineman, $9,828,000. Transition is $8,709,000. And the defensive tackle is $8,450,000. And the transition is $7,039,000. Now, with that being said, on average, over the past 7 years, the numbers of non-pick kickers slash punters that have been slapped with the franchise tag has ranged from 4 to 13, with the annual average of about 9.5. Also, and you probably know this, also defensive players are more likely to be tagged than offensive players, which is about 65% of the players tagged over this period played on defense. I got 6 players that are looking at 2014 that are non-kickers or punters that may end up being franchise tag, and these are the candidates. Jimmy Graham from New Orleans Saints, he's a tight end. T.J. Ward, that you mentioned before, from the Cleveland Browns, and Dennis Pitta, who happens to be a tight end that's real important to the Baltimore Ravens. Brent Grimes, who's a defensive back for the Miami Dolphins. Greg Hardy, who's a linebacker for the Carolina Panthers. And Vontae Davis, who is a defensive back for the Indianapolis Colts. I'm going to go to T.J. Ward first. Although Ward would greatly prefer signing a long-term deal, the Browns have the leverage in these negotiations based on the 2014 franchise tag projections. The Browns can sign Ward, who has an excellent 2013, to a one-year deal for $8 million. This scenario seems likely while Ward and the Browns try to hammer out a long-term extension over the summer. Now, I named two tight ends, three defensive backs, and a linebacker. How many out of those, or what do you think about the list here of these players that I named of getting franchise tagged? Talk to me.
I could definitely see the Browns franchising T.J. Ward. I think it would be in the best interest for them to do that. But as far as Jimmy Graham and Greg Hardy, they're probably the most sought-after free agents on the market. on the offense and the defensive side. I don't think it would be wise for those players or their self to sign those deals to try to get a contract, a long-term contract with their organizations. And I've seen some preliminary things go down already in New Orleans as far as them cutting loose Will Smith and a couple other high-priced veterans. I think they're trying to clear up some space to re-sign Jimmy Graham long-term.
$11 million.
Say again?
$11 million that they cut.
Yep. So, I mean, it's going to take a lot more than that. If I would just say for those two individuals, Greg Hardy and Jimmy Graham, they'd be cheating themselves if they did not go out and test the free agent market. They'd be costing themselves a lot of money. And not that they're not going to get paid a lot of money under being a franchise, but for them, it would just be taking themselves, taking a lot of money out of their own pocket, you know. But I think that fits for T.J. Ward. I mean, that's a pretty fair price at, like, what, $6 to $8 million for a safety?
Right. Safety,
but, I mean,
safety.
That's a fair price. The guy is young still, and he's coming off a monster season, and you want your cornerstones on defense. So, and, you know, this what have you done for me lately kind of league, so I think that's fair for both team and player for then the franchise T.J. Ward.
Well, and Jimmy Graham's in a unique position here, and I'm trying to think who was in that position last year. He was a tight end, but he was used more in a wide receiver position than he was in a tight end. I'm trying to think who the heck it was last year that was put in that position, and he was fighting to get to get wide receiver money versus tight end. I'm trying to think. I know it wasn't Jimmy Graham. I'm trying to think who the heck it was. That was a tight end that was used more in wide receiver than he was.
Was that Vernon Davis?
Excuse me?
Was it Vernon Davis?
No, it wasn't Vernon Davis. I'm trying to think who the heck it was and what team it was. But I think that they wound up signing him, but he was fighting the franchise tag for a tight end versus being franchised for a wide receiver, because he played wide receiver more than he played tight end. And I can't think of who it was. The reason I'm saying this, I can see Jimmy Graham going, and I read something that he may go that same route, that he was used more as a tight end, I mean more as a wide receiver. Quite naturally, he led the Saints in touchdowns, but he was used more as a wide receiver versus a tight end. Even though he's labeled as a tight end, his position is a tight end, but he was used more outside as a wide receiver versus a tight end. And I heard somewhere that he may be looking to get the franchise. If he gets franchised or if he wants to get paid, he wants to get paid as a wide receiver / tight end, not a tight end / wide receiver. So I can see that before the March 3rd deadline that I would think that the Saints would definitely want to sign Jimmy Graham to a long-term deal, not put a franchise tag on him. Because you have to think, these guys, some of these guys, they get a franchise tag and that pisses them off. They get a franchise tag that they don't want to negotiate. They'll wait till the franchise tag and then just walk away because it's hard feelings between the team and the player because of he got tagged. I read somewhere that Jimmy Graham does not want to be franchise tagged. He wouldn't take it too kindly if he got that tag put on him. So with a talent like that, you want to be on the good graces of him, even though you are the team and you control the player. The player has some leverage. Once he gets into free agency, he'll walk without any hard feelings and go somewhere to get paid because he felt he got treated unfairly by the team when it was time for him to get paid. So he'll have a tendency to look more for himself, even though the players do, but they look more for himself even more than he would if the team, when they had a choice of franchise tagging him or trying to put a long-term deal on the table, put a long-term deal on the table versus franchise tagging him and pissing him off. All right, we got about 4 minutes left in the show. These other guys, the only other one I would think would be the Dennis Pitta. They definitely need Dennis Pitta in the game, in their game plan. Joe Flacco relied on Dennis Pitta when he was healthy, big time, and they really don't have anyone on the other side or anyone to cover the middle of the field like Dennis Pitta can. And I think that if they can't reach a long-term deal before the March 3rd deadline, then the Ravens will most certainly use a franchise tag on Dennis Pitta to keep him within the organization. These other guys, I can't see these guys being franchise tagged. It might not be worth it for Brent Grimes or Vontae Davis. But Jimmy Graham, T.J. Ward, Dennis Pitta, and Greg Hardy, either a long-term deal or they get franchised. And more than likely, Jimmy Graham and T.J. Ward are going to get signed to a long-term contract versus getting franchised. All right, we got about two and a half minutes left in the show. Rev Fantasy, is there anything that you want to lay down before we get out of here and enjoy the rest of this day?
Not really. I'm looking forward to I'm really focused on NFL free agency coming up. I think it's going to be huge. I can't wait. I'm interested in seeing who's jumping ship and going somewhere else. And the draft coming up, man, I'm really excited about that. And I'm really just focused on those two things right now. And then, the Rev likes a little baseball, too. So I'm doing my preliminary research now on fantasy baseball and getting ready for baseball season coming up. So, and we need to tip our hat. We didn't say kudos to Derek Jeter on a great career, and he announced his retirement this past week. The 2014 will be his last season, his 20th in the league. And kudos to Derek Jeter, man. I tip my hat, even though I can't stand the Yankees. Always like Derek Jeter. He's a class act.
Yes, he is. All right. With that being said, next week, starting the 22nd, the NFL Combine, college prospects going to work out for the NFL pro scouts and coaching staffs. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the NFL Combine next week, along with anything else that happens to come up. The next week after that, which would be the 23rd, which would be the beginning of March, great time to talk about baseball. Is that what we'll be talking about, fantasy baseball and baseball in general? All right, so put that on your calendar. that starting in March, the first Sunday in March, we'll be talking about baseball, fantasy baseball, and who to look for, who to not, who you think is not going to do well this week. I mean, do well this season, and surprises, and guys that maybe having bounce back years. All sorts of things that we're going to be talking about transitioning into the baseball season. With that being said, Rev, I want to thank you for joining me as always. It's been a pleasure. And tune in next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Master Plan along with Rev Fantasy. We'll be here laying down the knowledge as always. And without the further ado, we are out of here. And throughout your day, throughout the week, win as much as you can in whatever you do. See ya.
DJ Khaled.
Hey.
Yeah.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.